Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Well, third seed's out the window. How about that fourth seed? Let's talk about it.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
So here we are in a fight for the fourth seed after a loss last night to the Atlanta Hawks. Jay King, bleary-eyed, just in from Atlanta, going on no sleep. This, people, this is what you call stepping up your game. Jay King rolling off the plane, getting in front of a microphone, and ready to podcast because the masses demand it.
This is why we should be known as heroes, not just podcasters.
True American heroes. So the Celtics handled their business mostly out west. They did what they were supposed to do. They took their three games. They then came home. They blasted the Hornets. They blasted the Pelicans. They blasted the Bucks. And now they played the Atlanta Hawks. In a game of this entire stretch, this was the game that they might have stumbled in. And they did stumble. They looked like a team, Jay, that was actually coming off, was actually playing a back-to-back. They struggled early. Then they kind of found their footing. And then Atlanta kind of ran away with it late. It looked like the guys ran out of gas. They were making turnovers that they hadn't made in a long time. Atlanta looked like the fresher team, the team that forced more turnovers down the stretch, got to the loose balls down the stretch, executed a lot better down the stretch. And so just one of those things, I guess, you can't expect these guys to be perfect on back-to-backs every game this year.
Yeah, it's weird because they are the rare team that back-to-backs just hardly ever affect. And I think part of it is because they're deep, part of it is because they're young, part of it is because they're just tough. But in that game, you know, after the midway mark of the third quarter, they clearly fell out of game. Avery Bradley wasn't even asked about it. And during his first answer, he was like, man, I was tired out there.
I was beat.
A lot of us were tired.
They definitely were fatigued. I think some of it was they tried to go small more often than usual. Stevens felt that Jared Sullinger wasn't the right matchup for him. And went to Jay Crowder at the four to start the second half. Went to Evan Turner at the four a little bit in the first half. And when you do that, you know, you're taxing those guys because they've got to bang with Al Horford and Paul Millsap and try to keep guys off the glass. And they're playing a few more minutes because Sullinger's minutes are cut. And so I think that took a toll. And then being on the second night of a back-to-back too. And for the first time in a while, I think, you know, the Celtics were very visibly tired.
Yeah, and, you know, this is the team that went out and beat Golden State on a back-to-back. So we have these unrealistic expectations, I think, where I think you go into a second night of a back-to-back now, and you're like, not a problem. We got this. But that doesn't happen anymore. The back-to-backs are over. The Celtics have a game. They have a game on Monday night, and they have a game on Wednesday night, and then they're in the playoffs, which means they'll have a couple of days off, and there's no more back-to-backs. So the fatigue thing is done. By the way, is this matching up based on who the other team is? Like, the Tyler Zeller going crazy against the Bucks, which was awesome, that doesn't happen anymore because you're playing one team. You're either going to be playing the Charlotte Hornets or you're going to be playing the Miami Heat. You know going in which matchups work, and maybe one team might switch something up and you have that little chess match. But these days of going deep into the bench and trying something new, that's done. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Celtics react, shortening the bench and getting this one team for that you're going to play. If it goes seven games, you're going to play for a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I think we saw a little bit of that against the Hawks. You know, it's rare that Stevens switches up the starting lineup at halftime. He does it occasionally. He's not afraid to do it when he thinks the matchups are right. But moving Jay Crowder to the four and taking Jared Sullinger out of the starting lineup, that's a big move that could foreshadow some of the mixing and matching that Stevens will do in the postseason. And I think that's the biggest aspect of having the roster fully healthy going into the postseason, is that he is free to mix and match, and he does have all his options, all of his flexibility. So, I mean, depending on who they play, that small lineup will be used a lot. Depending on who they play, they could go bigger. You know, now that Jay Crowder's back, they have their flexibility again, and that's a big deal. But, yeah, going into the playoffs, I don't know how they'll shorten the rotation because, I mean, when you look at it, one of their best lineups has been the Avery Bradley in the bench lineup. And if you shorten the rotation, you could hurt that lineup. You could take that lineup out of existence. If you do play that lineup, it might not work nearly as well against, you know, other teams that have shortened the rotation and are playing their best players more often. So a lot of questions about their rotation, I guess. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, Danny Ainge goes on 98.5 The Sports Hub and says, I'm afraid we can be taken out of our game. And he doesn't sound too confident that the Celtics are built for the playoffs. And I think that's part of it, is because their depth really sets them apart. And depth doesn't matter as much in the playoffs because there are no back-to-backs. Because
the guys play more minutes. Because there are a whole list of reasons why depth isn't as important in the playoffs. And that's an issue for them since it is, you know, probably their best asset.
So let's get to some of these individual things, like Isaiah Thomas. Now, Isaiah Thomas had his first bad game in a long time, which in and of itself, not really a big concern. Everybody's going to have one bad game, and he had it. It just happened to be in an important game. So be it. But I said afterwards that there is a little bit of concern because of who it came against. And I just wonder if there's any bit of that, like you just said about Danny Ainge, the Celtics being taken out of their game. I think last night Isaiah might have just been playing a little too fast. Maybe he was a little too caught up in the moment. A few times he went to the rim and the layup would just kind of bounce too hard off of the backboard. So I think he was maybe playing too fast, but how much of it was Atlanta game planning for Isaiah Thomas and taking him somewhat out of his game? Is that something that's where my concern lies, that a team in a series can game plan for Isaiah Thomas and that could be a real issue?
Listen, everybody game plans for Isaiah Thomas every single night. And last night against the Hawks was the first time since February 29th he scored fewer than 20 points. And it took him going 4-for-14 at the rim. And as you said, some of his layups were just going off. Playing too fast, he always plays fast, you know? So I'd be surprised if over a series against the Hawks or anybody else, I think – you know, obviously he had his struggles against Cleveland last year in the playoffs. I think he's a better player now. I think his game against the Hawks was just, you know, finally the guy ran into an off night. He missed a lot of shots that he normally makes. He threw some weird turnovers, like the one to Evan Turner on the side. And then Jeff Teague just completely anticipated what he was going to do, picked him. Paul Millsap picked him. It was just a weird night where he did a lot of uncharacteristic things. I don't think it's an issue. That guy's been really, really good for more than a month. He was really, really good against the Warriors in the second half. He's been really, really good against
every defense, whether it's long, athletic, strong. He's beaten everybody. So I wouldn't be too worried about Isaiah Thomas. I think their issues are the issues that they should be concerned with heading into the playoffs. He's last on the list.
So what's first on the list?
that's a good question. Depends on who they play, I guess. Scoring, maintaining scoring throughout. I mean, you go against the Hawks, one of the top defenses in the league, and they're down two. Celtics are down two. Even after kind of falling apart at the end of the third quarter, they're down two midway through the fourth and go through almost 5 minutes without scoring a point. And so...
Well, yeah. So now that brings us to one of these Twitter questions that at Celtics, Mike, IT had a tough scoring game last night. Who do the Celtics go to as a second option if that happens in the playoffs? You look at who they throw out there in the starting lineup. Avery Bradley, is he the second scoring option? Is he going to be able to do that? Is Jay Crowder? Jay Crowder, by the way, said in the Globe yesterday that his high ankle sprain is going to be basically an issue until June or July. So that swelling is going to be around. He's just going to have to deal with that. Can he can he be the second option? Or is the second scoring option somebody off of the bench? Is Evan Turner going to have to be the guy? Or where do they turn? Or is it just going to be something from everybody?
I think it's been one of those things where throughout the season, it's been a little bit of everybody. I think, obviously, Crowder emerged as their number two option, although he hasn't been nearly as efficient since coming back from his ankle injury. He does say he's getting better and better every night, and I think that's as much conditioning as the ankle actually hurting him because, I mean, he sat for just about 3 weeks, and with that bad an ankle sprain, you can't stay conditioned. So I think his getting his win back has been a big thing, and he played 34 minutes against Atlanta, which I think was the most minutes he's played since the injury. So that's a good sign. And I mean, in the second half, he had a bad start, I thought, against Bazemore defensively in that game. And then second half, you know, really good. He had that turnover and then snatched it away from, I forget who it was, and went in for the dunk, then finished the layup 2 seconds later, and then had that awesome play where he dove on the floor and tapped it with his left hand. I think it was to Bradley. So he played great, I thought. I thought that was by far his best game since he's returned from the injury. So that's a good sign. They do it with everybody, though. They, you know, some nights it'll be Kelly Olynyk, and other nights it'll be Evan Turner. I think Isaiah's the constant, and then you just try to fill it in otherwise. Their issue, I guess, and this is, I guess it becomes a bigger issue in the playoffs. I don't think it's just because it's the playoffs. I think it's more because you're playing better defenses in the playoffs, and they don't really have that other guy who can create a shot against anyone. And that becomes a bigger issue when the game slows down and you're playing a defense like the Hawks, which really tests you and makes you earn your shot attempts even.
Yeah, the Hawks are a tough matchup, and they're really starting to play well at the right time. They're going to be an interesting team to watch going through the playoffs. And, you know, if they're going to end up, a Hawks-Raptors series is going to be really, really interesting. I don't know who's going to win that. That's going to be tough, assuming that that's where it goes. To face the Celtics in the conference finals.
Naturally. And then it'll be Celtics-Warriors, which will definitely go seven.
Yeah, the Warriors do not want to face the Celtics in the finals, that's for sure. let's look. I want to get to this tweet from Mike, who says, if we knew last summer that we would get 47 to 49 wins and home court in the playoffs, we'd have been happy. Now, how do we feel now? And going back to one of our first podcasts, I think we each picked somewhere around 47 wins, right? I think 47 is where I settled.
I feel like, yeah, we were probably right around there.
Yeah. So here we are with the potential for 49 wins. So pretty close. And it turns out that all of those crazy – I remember looking at those crazy computer models at the beginning of the season thinking, why are they picking so many wins? Because I originally went in thinking that this could be a 500 team and maybe a six seed. And then I kind of got swayed and I started to buy into the hype. And so here we are. I think that this is exactly what everybody would have signed up for. If you said, forget the regular season, we're just going to knock you, we're just going to put you right in, pull out the Sharpie, write it in. Celtics are the fourth seed, home court in the first round, 49 wins, and boom, done. Everybody would take that. No one would be upset about that, right?
Yeah, and what's cool, I think, is that the progression went from last year, you know, the hope was probably heading into the playoffs to escape Cleveland in round one. Now it's people were hoping to escape Cleveland in round two. And it's like that's a cool progression, I think. And it shows that they have taken a step forward. And the East is tougher this year. And the Celtics, you know, they had to really improve, I think, to get to 47 wins, possibly 48 or 49. And really they've taken off, I guess, since David Lee got taken out of the rotation.
It always goes back to Lee.
Every conversation, we always – but that was the turning point, right? I mean, they were just kind of 500-ish, and then they dropped David Lee and got a lot better at basketball. And here they are, 47 wins with – you know, they control their own destiny. If they win two games at home, they will have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs, which is cool. And I think they would be favored against – Charlotte, if they play them, I think it would be one heck of a series if they play Miami. And, yeah, I think people were really disappointed by losing to Atlanta. And I think that's mostly because there was that opportunity to avoid LeBron and Cleveland in round one, or round two, rather. And I think, you know, people are thinking ahead and thinking best-case scenario and thinking, you know, the Celtics can definitely win a first round series. You know, it's not that's definite that it'll happen, but they could. They absolutely have the potential to win a first round series, and then meet the Raptors. Who knows? People are thinking, and then they were hoping to meet LeBron and the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals. But now, you know, Atlanta has a clear inside track for number three, and the Celtics, if they do win the first round, might head on over to Cleveland for a rematch of last year's playoff series.
You know that there are people out there right now who are thinking, just rest everybody, lose the next two games, drop to six, and then avoid Cleveland that way.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not saying that I advocate that. I'm just saying that people, when you talk about people getting ahead of themselves and trying to plan out like two or three series ahead, there are people who are saying, don't worry about it. That Hawks loss, there's a lot great to see, and they were tired in a back-to-back. We can beat them in a seven-game series.
Yeah. Those people are sickos. Avoid Atlanta in round one. Atlanta is very good. They're playing some good basketball. That's one of the best defenses in the league. They're a tough matchup because Millsap can really stretch some of their big guys, and so can Horford. And they can switch just about everything. I mean, that is a good, good team in Atlanta. I don't think they're getting enough credit because people had such high expectations for them after last year that when they weren't as good in the regular season, people were a little down on them and probably more so than they should have been. And now they've just been playing really good basketball for a while. And they're kind of, I think, a little different than last year in that they're probably a better defensive team and not as good offensively, but that's a good team.
Yeah.
That if the Celtics played them on the road in round one, Atlanta would definitely be favored in that.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy to, and I don't like that stuff. I don't like the whole playoff position. I'm personally a fan of do what you do, win the game, go out and try to win the games, and then wherever you fall, you fall. So if they go out and they try to beat Miami and try to beat Charlotte and happen to lose both games, so be it. But I think that you just go out and do it, and let's look at this as potentially a fourth seed. I think they can get that fourth seed considering the tiebreakers. And who knows what happens today. By the time people listen to this show, the Charlotte game will already be mostly over or already over. They might lose, and Miami might lose. So that could just further solidify the Celtics in the fourth seed. So who knows?
By the way, Celtics fans, everybody call Earl Watson, thank him, God bless him, the Phoenix Suns, with two straight victories, which could give the Celtics, you know, an extra 3-4% to land the top overall pick. Celtics could enter, if the current standings hold, they will enter the lottery with almost a 50% chance of getting a top three pick. And that would
be
huge.
That's amazing.
That would, when you think about it that way, almost 46.9, whatever it is, that is one heck of a chance to land a top three pick. And basically a coin flip. If they win a coin flip, they're going to have a top three pick. And so God bless the Phoenix Suns. God bless Earl Watson. God bless Devin Booker. And God bless the Brooklyn Nets for Brooke Lopez and Thaddeus Young.
I like that Sean Marks went in there and just basically, it seems like Brooklyn was still hung up on that Pierce and Garnett trade and so didn't want to continue to lose that trade by giving the Celtics the best pick possible. Like, they were trying to win. They were trying to win these games. And I really do think that it was to spite the Celtics. So, in the end, they can say, see, it wasn't that great of a trade. So, but Marks went in. It's like, it's pretty clear that, look, you go in there, you just burn it all to the ground. It doesn't matter. At this point, it doesn't matter what they give the Celtics. It could be three straight number one overall picks. They got bigger issues. They got bigger fish to fry over there. So, I'm glad that there's some level of sanity over there, and especially because it benefits the Boston Celtics. They could look, a few years ago, we were talking about tanking. Last year, there were people upset about the Celtics making the playoffs, but they fought to get into the playoffs. This year, we're fighting for home court, and we could get a number one overall seed. And Alex had a great tweet, like, listing that out yesterday, and this is what rebuilding is. That this is truly how you rebuild. You're terrible one year, you get better, and then you keep getting better and better and better. And all of these things that you do, these trades that you make, these things that you do to build a team, they pay off. The Celtics have done it the right way. And by the way, as I always want to do when I talk about rebuilding, the Hinkie era in Philly, that whole thing, I don't want to turn this into a 76ers podcast, but that whole thing is just, I'll surprise maybe a few people by saying this. I almost feel bad for Hinkie because he was sold a bill of goods. Like he was told we're going to roll with this plan. And then all of a sudden that plan got so bad that they were like, we can't roll with this plan anymore. And he was just like, this was supposed to be like maybe the year that they got Saric and they got, you know, Embiid back and everything. We're going to finally see who was right. Was I right? And people like me who are thinking that this was just completely an embarrassment, or was he going to be right to say, look, you just burn it to the ground for as long as you have to. And then all of a sudden everything's going to come together. But I just, this whole Philly thing, I'm like, I'm loving it. I've conflicted about it. And I just feel like I'm laughing because Hinkie went out in this, like, with this like 13-page manifesto
That was hysterical. The funniest part of that by far was when he said that when the Celtics traded for Joel Anthony and got 2 second-round picks in the deal, Hinkie considered it a tragedy because he couldn't get those second-round picks. That was unbelievable. Calling it a tragedy when you don't get 2 second-round picks to take on Joel Anthony is amazing. Like, come on, Sam. You got to live life in a way that you do not consider it a tragedy when you fail to acquire Joel Anthony. That is the least tragic thing that any GM should ever have to endure. That oh my God, that 13-page letter, well, it was fascinating. It was really I'm on a completely different end of the spectrum from you on this. I think they needed, like, they had a team that was going to be mediocre, and I think they needed to tear it down. And I think he did set them up very well with draft picks and some young talent. And I think if he'd had a little more lottery luck, then people would look back differently on it. And they might get lottery luck this summer, and people will still look back differently on it. So I think it was way too early for them to give up on the Hinkie plan. And the fact that you hire this guy who clearly came in with the intent to burn everything to ashes and then build it back up, and then you don't even give him 3 years. Like, I know at some point it's got to have a tangible winning aspect to it, the rebuilding process, but it was way too early to give up on him and bring in Colangelo and trade 2 second-round picks for Ish Smith. Like, imagine if he considered it a tragedy not to get Joel Anthony, how much of a tragedy did he consider it when they decided to trade 2 second-round picks for freaking Ish Smith? So,
and the fact that Ish Smith came in and actually helped that team.
Although that was kind of like completely overblown. Like, they were terrible. They won a couple games. Ish Smith is still bad at basketball. He just was like, he came at the right time and they won a few games. I think he got way too much credit for that. Some reporter, I forget who it was. It was in Boston. Someone asked if he'd kind of had a similar impact to what Isaiah Thomas did in Boston. And I was sitting there like, what? Are you freaking kidding me? Ish Smith? Come on.
Totally
now.
The same player. Totally the same.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, I think the point was Ish Smith did things that nobody else on the 76ers roster did, just like Isaiah came in, and he was a good fit because he did things nobody else on the Celtics roster did. But, man, was that – like, Ish Smith is a borderline NBA point guard, and Isaiah Thomas is a legitimate all-star, possible all-NBA guy. So let's relax with that.
Yeah. I felt like I had to mention the Philly thing just a little bit. I am a little disappointed. Like, I feel like I've sat through a bad movie and I don't get to see the ending. There is that little bit of feeling in me. Like, I've invested in hating this movie and I want to see that. Like, I feel like I want the validation. Like, I want the validation that I'm right, that this was really the absolute wrong way to go. And I feel a little unfulfilled. Like, I didn't want Hinkie to go because I wanted to see it completely fail. And I was very anti-Hinkie. I don't think he did it the right way. I don't like the way he did it. And so I kind of wanted to see it go through 2 more years and just see how bad it was. Or if I was to be proven wrong, I wanted to see if it could it be proven wrong. Was I just thinking the wrong way? So, but
what's going to be hysterical is when the Colangelos come in this summer and in a mediocre free agent class with tons of money, they're going to sign like some mediocre guys, and that franchise is going to go straight back to the mediocrity that it spent 3 years trying to avoid. And it's going to be hilarious.
They're
I can't
get
wait.
Like, They're going to get Harrison Barnes. They're going to give Harrison Barnes the max, and he's going to be their top player. And he's not.
Yeah, it's going to be like Harrison Barnes and DeMar DeRozan, and then they're going to be mediocre forever.
Yeah.
Until Joel Embiid comes in and is the next Hakeem Olajuwon.
Right, right. Joel Embiid's rookie year is going to be when he's 30 years old. All right, moving on back to the Boston Celtics. Let's look ahead to Charlotte and Miami. Do you think they're going to win both of these games? Do you think that we're looking at fourth seed, and what do you think is going to be 4-5 Celtics Miami or 4-5 Celtics Charlotte?
I think it'll be 4-5 Celtics Miami. Then again, I haven't looked at the schedules of Miami and Charlotte lately, so that could go either way. I suspect it'll be Miami.
Let's look at the schedules, because both of those teams play today. Charlotte plays Washington today, and Miami has a rematch with Orlando in Miami. So that's today. So Charlotte, those should be wins for Charlotte and Miami both. Then Charlotte comes into Boston on a back-to-back. So the Celtics, if the Celtics handle their business there, then that's obviously that's good for the Celtics. And then Miami on the 12th plays Detroit, and then the last game of the regular season, it's Miami at Boston, Orlando at Charlotte.
Yeah. I still think it's going to be Celtics-Miami. I'm hoping, at least, because I want to go to Miami instead of Charlotte to cover the series.
You're like that NBA player that just chooses the sun and the beach.
No. See, if I were actually a free agent, I would pick the best basketball situation for me, which is why I'm in Boston covering a team. But as far as going on road trips, yes, please give me the beach any time of year. I need the beach instead of Charlotte, please.
Nice save. Okay, so Celtics Heat. By the time we record our next podcast, we will have probably played game one of that series.
Crazy. It's crazy how quickly the regular season goes by. And now the Celtics are just about to start the playoffs, baby.
It really is amazing that it felt, this season in particular, felt like it really flew by. I don't know.
As soon as David Lee got out of the rotation.
Yeah.
I had to make that joke.
That line of demarcation. It's before Lee and after Lee. Like, there's like, it's like, you know, BC and AD. It's, you know, before Lee, there's like a separate Celtics team. It's like two seasons. Let's get to more of these Twitter questions before we wrap it up. Alex asks, what's your favorite Celtics five-man lineup this season?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I feel like we haven't visited this. Like, we visited this at the start of the season, and we probably haven't visited this in a while. My favorite during the regular season, I think, not that it's the best, but it's just so entertaining, is the Avery Bradley and bench mob with Jarebko and Olynyk. They just force a lot of turnovers. They like the other day, they threw those two alley-oops back to back. That's a fun group when they get going. Although I guess Tyler Zeller was in that at that time. We'll give that group credit for those alley-oops anyway.
That play, by the way, the Turner to Smart, like, touch pass alley-oop to Olynyk was awesome. That was so great.
That was beautiful. So I think my two real lineups that I would throw out there as the candidates would be the small lineup with Isaiah, Marcus, Avery, Crowder, and Amir Johnson. I think that's a strong lineup. I think
the other small lineup that has done really well is Isaiah, Evan, Crowder, Bradley, and Sullinger. And then I guess I'm throwing three lineups out there. I think that the lineup with Sullinger and Olynyk and then the three starting perimeter guys has been really good. They're outscoring opponents by 22 points per 100 possessions over 93 minutes. That group has been – Sullinger and Olynyk, when they're together, the offense really, really looks good. So I think you'd miss Amir Johnson in that. Amir Johnson, last month, he must have been so hurt earlier this year because his impact over the last month and a half has just been – completely different than it was earlier in the season.
Absolutely.
I mean, that guy is really getting healthy and hitting his stride at the right time.
Yeah.
What would be your five?
See, I love seeing Bradley, Smart, and Crowder in the lineup together because just the way they impact the defense and start fast breaks. And that mm-hmm. lineup has always included Isaiah Thomas. They've run out Sullinger with that a few times, and or Amir Johnson. And actually, the fifth guy almost doesn't even matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing Bradley and Smart especially just hounding guys. And then you throw Crowder into that mix, just the turnovers, the fast breaks have been just amazing to watch. And lately, honestly, Evan Turner has been on the floor during some fun stretches. And I think, again, going before Lee and after Lee, the Evan Turner of February, March, and April has been really good. And he's done some really good things out there. He's actually been part of some entertaining lineups. So I liked that lineup that you were talking about with Turner and Smart. And Sullinger and those guys, but
yeah,
I think
Turner, because he's so good at converting offense or defense into offense. Like he's become a much better defender. He's good in the passing lane, and anytime he gets a turnover, he's heading up court and he's either finding someone ahead or taking it himself. He's become really good, I think, at converting that. And I think Avery Bradley's become really good at that too, where as soon as someone else gets a steal, Avery just takes off. He's gotten a lot of fast break layups that way this year.
Yeah.
So it's really fun to watch those guys when they're forcing turnovers and get out in transition. Much fun.
Here are three things that I think have stood out to me for over the past couple of months that haven't been really talked about. One, Avery Bradley's ball handling has been much, much improved, where a couple of years ago, we couldn't trust him to handle the ball at all. And now when he gets the ball in the fast break and he's dribbling, he had one play, he got fouled. I think this was against Milwaukee. He went behind the back and like a little wraparound and went for and he did it cleanly. Like his ball handling has improved a lot. And I think that's allowed him to get a lot of these finishes. A lot of times he gets a steal or someone gets a steal, gets it up to him. He's dribbling the ball from half court. He's taking a defender and he's getting around the defender and finishing where he didn't used to be able to do that. That's one. Two, what you mentioned, the Amir Johnson, his health has been better, and I don't know if he was holding back or what, but he's been playing a lot better lately. And three, Marcus Smart's passing has been really, really good. At a time where his shooting hasn't been bad, last night's first half, the exception, where I don't know where he pulled four three-pointers out of his ass, but he did. His passing has been tremendous. Again, back to that alley-oop. He was off balance, touch pass, perfect alley-oop to Olynyk. But beyond that, he's had passes like he's dribbled down through the baseline and found guys. He's had that alley-oop to Tyler Zeller the other night was really nice because he stopped and lulled. It was Jabari Parker who was in the lane. kind of lulled him to sleep a little bit and pulled it back out. And as soon as Parker relaxed and turned his head and focused on Smart, he threw that alley-oop to Zeller. It's a perfectly done play. And I think that his passing and the other aspects of his game, when we look at Smart's impact and how he still has been a net positive despite shooting as poorly as a professional basketball player can shoot when he played that many minutes, that's why his impact has been so positive, because he does some of these other things really, really well. And again, a second-year player. He is a second-year player doing these other things really, really well. So those three things have really stood out to me over the past few months of the season.
I agree with all your observations, John. You are a genius basketball observer.
Thanks.
The Philadelphia 76ers should have hired you to replace Sam Hinkie.
They should have.
And then you could have capitalized on the advantageous situation he has put the 76ers in.
Back to the Twitter questions. I'm getting my balls busted something fierce over here now. Brad said, I know Isaiah has been great, but every game it seems like the other team will have the best player on the court. I guess I disagree with that. I disagree with you, Brad, but thanks for the question or the comment. Going into the Miami series, who would be, if they get Chris Bosh back, then Bosh would probably be the best player on the floor.
Although, who knows what type of shape he'll be in.
Right. So maybe not, but Dwayne Wade's pretty good. And
Isaiah will be the best player on the court in a first-round series against either Miami or Charlotte.
I agree.
Yeah.
But look, I think a little bit to maybe Brad's point, it's maybe he will be the best player on the floor. But what the Celtics really would be great to have is to have somebody who's beyond a shadow of a doubt the best player on the floor. Like, that's the type of player that...
Yeah, I mean, if you have LeBron James, it'd be nice.
Right. But that's when we're talking about, like, the Celtics need a superstar. Like, that's the level of player that I think they need. And when we're talking about Isaiah Thomas has been phenomenal. And he is, yes, against the Hornets, he is the best player on the floor. But, you know, they've got Kemba Walker, and he's pretty good too. And so it's not like the superstar. It's not like Durant on the floor versus Kemba Walker. But look, they are where they are, and they're not signing Kevin Durant until this July, obviously. So let's kind of go with what we have. I still think Isaiah Thomas in the first round, like you said, Jay, will be the best player on the floor. So,
I think he's been the best player on the floor most nights since the end of February.
He's been tremendous. He's been amazing. The types of plays that he's been making have been you can't argue that he's played the best basketball of his life.
Yeah, I mean, even that Warriors game when Stephen Curry went on the ridiculous Stephen Curry streak, the inevitable Stephen Curry streak, Isaiah Thomas that quarter almost matched him. And nobody matches Steph Curry when Steph Curry goes full Steph Curry. And still, Isaiah was just about stride for stride with him. Isaiah has been so good lately. And I think, I don't know what it is, but I think people still kind of don't give him enough credit for just how damn good he's been all season. I think people are starting to kind of come around on him and realize, like, this guy is one of the most inevitable offensive forces in the NBA. But I think it took a while for people to realize just how good he is. And you know, I can remember at the beginning of the season, we were talking about how he should come off the bench, or at least I was arguing he should come off the bench because he's better off with small lineups and he needs the spacing to operate. No, he doesn't need spacing. He just needs the ball.
Yeah.
Just give him the ball. He'll be okay, Jay. Stop making yourself look like a goddamn idiot.
Hey, so, look, I was with you. I was arguing the same thing.
Yeah.
Because that was, up until that point, that was true. That was that's what the history has shown us, that he needed some spacing. And look, who doesn't need spacing to do what they need to do? Like, that's today's NBA. You put a bunch of shooters out there and you let guys operate, and life is a lot better with two guys in the corner that can hit a three, and you let, whether it's Isaiah Thomas or Chris Paul or anybody, you let that, you give that person an extra foot in the lane to operate, and they'll be better. So, but he's been great.
Yeah. Yes, he has. Isaiah Thomas, best player on the floor most nights. Although Giannis, oh man, Giannis was so good in that first quarter. He was scary.
He was. It was interesting. It was really interesting to see. And how will teams react to that? I mean, Avery Bradley, you know, checked him and did an okay job. I want to say this, though, and I know that there's going to be a little bit of irony because Isaiah Thomas is really accused of doing this too. I was watching an earlier Bucks game, and the amount of palming the ball that is allowed in the NBA today,
it's crazy.
It's insane. Like, he was making a crossover move, and Isaiah Thomas does this. Everybody does this now. The ball, he had his hand like on the bottom of the ball. Like, you're dribbling and you're allowed to put your hand on the bottom of the ball, or at least like at like 4 or 7 o'clock on the ball. Like, that's, you're turning the ball over like that. It's impossible as a defender when a guy, especially a guy like Antetokounmpo's size, is coming down, dribbling the ball.
Did you just say his name correctly?
I did.
Wow.
If he's coming down and dribbling and then pausing and putting his hand like underneath the ball and then inside out dribble or crossover, the defender has no chance because the ball has literally stopped moving and then it begins moving again. So I don't know if that's going to ever be a point of emphasis in the NBA. I feel like there's going to be something at some point in the next year or two where that has to be checked, because as much as I like seeing these killer crossovers, like, that is, it's excessive. People got to be watching that and just acknowledge that it's excessive.
You know, you're getting old when you go on minute long rants about palming the basketball, John.
Am I wrong?
No, I mean, who cares?
All right, I guess.
Let him palm it. Let him travel a little bit.
Sure, let him double dribble. Let him hit.
Yeah, you
whatever.
Know, maybe that'll be the next step.
Let him take five steps. Let him put the ball down and do like a little jig and maybe grab a bucket from the sideline that's full of confetti, but people think it's water. You can, like, throw that at people, too. Let them do it all, man.
I don't know where you're going with the confetti thing, but...
It's a Harlem Globetrotters reference.
See, I was never a Globetrotter type of guy.
You've never seen the Globetrotter, like, throw water and then grab the bucket and then throw confetti?
I probably went when I was, like, 6 years old, and then I was too old for that crap. Give me competitive basketball. I don't like all-star games. I don't like the Globetrotters. I don't like the last pickup game of the day. I need competitive hard-nosed basketball, John.
All right. We're just about done here. Let's get to one last Twitter question. It comes from Mike at Simp Nation, who, I love that people send these tweets now. It's not a tweet. It's like a big picture with like lots of words in it, so they get around the character limit. So Mike says, "Me and my wife will land in Boston Monday morning, and we'll be there until Friday midday. It will be our first time in Boston. We will be going to the Hornets game. Then on Tuesday, we're going to the Red Sox game. Then on Wednesday, we have awesome fifth row seats to the Heat game. As locals, what are a couple of eatery places that are must-eats? First of all, awesome trip." That's a great trip. Mid-April, you catch two meaningful who actually gets to schedule a mid-April trip during the NBA season, catch the last two games of the season, and have them mean something? Those are generally meaningless games.
Shout out to his wife for wanting to do that.
Yeah.
Shout out to his
awesome.
Wife.
Awesome. Great job. And then you catch a Red Sox game. Awesome trip. That sounds great. As far as eating in Boston, I don't know. There, you know, you could do like the, you know, you got to go to Legal Seafoods and grab their clam chowder. That's always a thing to do. You can go.
You're gonna give them a chain?
A chain? They're not a chain.
It's
not like I said go to Red Lobster. I mean, Legal Seafoods is a local thing.
That's
a Boston thing.
You just gave them a chain.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm gonna send Legal Seafoods a copy of this and say that you call them a chain and see what they have to say. They actually have a campaign. They're not a chain. But look, that's like a Boston thing to do. You go there, you have your clam chowder. But then, like, that's a thing. They're there for a week. There's a lot of places. You can go through Quincy Market. You can do the tourist thing. You go through Quincy Market and get tourist thing. If you want to get clam chowder, they got, like, those cool places with the bread bowls. They're overpriced, but they're delicious. I would say any walk through the North End and you can get find a place. Just find a little – there's a million Italian restaurants there. Go to Mike's Pastry and grab, like, one of their, like, Italian pastries there. That's a thing to do. As far as near the Garden, all of those places near the Garden are, like, all, like, you know, bars with bar food. So, you know, you go to the Fours. The Fours is, like, a good local place to go. That's something to do. What else? What am I missing?
Honestly, I never go out to eat around the Garden. I just go in and go to work. And then go back to the South End, my apartment, and eat there. I am the last person to ask about food near the Garden, as weird as that sounds, considering I go there 41 times a year plus playoffs.
Well, you got that big spread in the media workroom there.
Yep, you pay $5, you eat whatever they give you, and it's like going back to school cafeteria, except you pay for it.
It's not bad, though. Their food's not
bad. Actually, I will give this to the Celtics. They have probably the best pregame spread in the NBA. Although Atlanta gave us Chick-fil-A.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
I know people that will, like, murder for Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't have to murder for it. I just had to ask for one of the boxes at Atlanta. It was nice. Good food in Atlanta.
Cool. All right, we're going to wrap this up. So by the time we speak next, the playoffs will have begun. Hell, we might be, depending on the schedule, we might be two games into the playoffs. So before we go, let's get a prediction. Where will we be when we start recording our next podcast? What will the Celtics situation be?
On the beach in Miami, please. No, I think if I had to guess, I would guess they win home court advantage, get the 4 seed, and host. Who has the tiebreaker between Miami and Charlotte?
I think Miami.
Yeah, then they host Miami, and that's it. And then I get to go to the beach for games 3 and 4. And then it'll be a Celtics sweep, obviously. So, no, actually that series would be really good. That'll go 6 or 7. That'll be a fun series.
I would guess that they would probably do like a Friday-Sunday thing with those guys. So, I think that because, look, the season ends.
They usually start it on Saturday.
Saturday, okay. So they do like Saturday and then what?
Saturday, Sunday is normally, I feel like half the series start on Saturday, half of them start Sunday. Isn't that how they do it?
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. Because the season ends on Wednesday, so they give teams Thursday, Friday to wrap it up, and then they'll start either Saturday or Sunday. So if they start on Saturday, I think the Celtics obviously will win game one. So we might be looking at either a 1-0 Celtics lead, or hey, maybe they get a Sunday game. We record a Saturday preview series preview podcast.
Boom.
Love it. All right.
Boom. So, one last question.
Yeah.
What will you do if the Celtics hire Hinkie?
In what capacity would they hire Hinkie?
Who knows? Just let's say they hire Sam Hinkie.
If they, oh God, I would welcome him with open arms, knowing that the Celtics know what they're doing, and Danny Ainge has a master plan, and there's no way that Hinkie would get hired for anything more than some cheap little analytics role. But no way is that happening. I will not entertain not seriously entertain this thought. Whatever. All right. That's it. We're wrapping it up. Fun show. Follow us on Twitter. Rate us. Give us that big 5-star rating that we so crave on iTunes. Go now, please. Hit the 5 stars, please. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week on the Rain and Jays podcast.
Napa Know How.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.